as I would a child, and so have proved that she has no power but the little I give her by momentary whim. So I might set aside Hrothgar's whole kingdom and all his thanes if I did not, for sweet desire's sake, set limits to desire. If I murdered the last of the Scyldings, what would I live for? I'd have to move. So now, for once unsure of victory, I might set limits to desire. Go to sleep, put off further raids till the Geats go home. For the world is divided, experience teaches, into two parts. Things to be murdered, and things that would hinder the murder of things. And the Geats might reasonably be defined either way. So I whispered, wading through drifts waist-high, inexorably on my way to Hrothgar's meat-hall. Darkness lay over the world like a coffin-lid. I hurried. It would be a shame to miss the boasting. I came to the hall, bent down at my chink, peered in. The wind was shrill, full of patterns. It was a scene to warm the cockles of your heart. The Danes were not pleased, to say the least, that the Geats had come to save them. Honor is very big with them. They'd rather be eaten alive than be bailed out by strangers. The priests weren't happy either. They'd been saying for years that the ghostly destroyer would take care of things in time. Now here were these foreigner upstarts unmasking religion. My old friend Orc sat shaking his head in dismay, saying nothing, brooding, no doubt, on the dark metaphysical implications. Things fade. Alternatives exclude. Whichever of us might exclude the other, when the time came for me and the stranger to meet, the eyes of the people would be drawn to the instance. They would fail to rise to the holy idea of process. Theology does not thrive in the world of action and reaction. Change, it grows uncalm like the scum on a stagnant pool. And it flourishes, it prospers, on decline. Only in a world where everything is patently being lost can a priest stir men's hearts as a poet would by maintaining that nothing is in vain. For old time's sake, for the old priest's honor, I would have to kill the stranger. And for the honor of Hrothgar's thanes. The Danes sat sulking, watching the strangers eat, wishing some one of them would give them an excuse to use their daggers. I covered my mouth to keep from cackling. The king presided, solemn and irritable. He knew that his thanes couldn't handle me alone, and he was too old and tired to be much impressed, however useful it might be to his kingdom, by their fathead ideas of honor. Get through the meal, that's the thing, he was thinking. Keep them from wasting their much-touted skills on one another. The queen wasn't present, situation much too touchy. Then up spoke Unferth, Edgelaf's son, top man in Hrothgar's hall. He had a nose like a black deformed potato, eyes like a couple of fangs. He leaned forward over the table, and pointed the dagger he'd been eating with. "Say, friend," he said to the beardless leader of the Geats, "are you the same man that went swimming that time with young Breca? Risked your lives in the middle of the winter for nothing, for a crazy mead boast?" The stranger stopped eating, smiled. "We heard about that," Unferth said. Nobody could stop you. Kings, priests, counselors, nobody. Splash! Unferth made swimming motions, eyes rolled up, mouth gasping. The thanes around him laughed. "The sea boiled with waves, fierce winter swells. 7 nights you swam, so people say." He made his face credulous, and the Danes laughed again. "And at last Breca beat you, much stronger than you were. He proved his boast against you, for what it may be worth." The Danish thanes laughed. Even Hrothgar smiled. Unferth grew serious. And now only the stranger went on smiling, he alone and the huge Geats next to him, patient as timber wolves. Unferth pointed with his dagger, giving friendly advice. "I predict it will go even worse for you tonight. You may have had successes. I haven't heard. But wait up for Grendel, for one night's space, and all your glorious successes will be done with." The Danes applauded. The stranger smiled on, his downward slanting eyes like empty pits. I could see his mind working, stone cold, grinding like a mill wheel. When the hall was still, he spoke, soft-voiced, his weird gaze focused nowhere. "Ah, friend Unferth, drunk with mead, you've said a good deal about Breca. The truth is, nevertheless, that I beat him. I'm stronger in the ocean than any other man alive. Like foolish boys, we agreed on the match and boasted. Yes, we were both very young. Swore we'd risk our lives in the sea and did so. We took swords with us, swimming one-handed to fight off whales." Unferth laughed, and the others followed, as was right. It was preposterous. The stranger said, "Breca couldn't swim away from me for all his strength. A man with arms like yours, friend Unferth. And as for myself, I chose not to swim away from him. Thus we swam for 5 nights, and then a storm came up, icy wind from the north, black sky, raging waves, and we were separated. The turmoil stirred up the sea monsters. One of them attacked me, dragged me down to the bottom where the weight of the sea would have crushed any other man. But it was granted to me that I might kill him with my sword, which same I did. Then others attacked. They pressed me hard. I killed them, 9 old water nickers, robbed them of the feast they expected at the bottom of the sea. In the morning, sword ripped, they lay belly up near shore. They'd trouble no more passing sailors after that. Light came from the east, and behold, I saw headlands, and I swam to them. Fate often enough will spare a man if his courage holds." Now the Danes weren't laughing. The stranger said it all so calmly, so softly, that it was impossible to laugh. He believed every word he said. I understood at last the look in his eyes. He was insane. Even so, I wasn't prepared for what came next. Nobody was. Solemn, humorless, despite the slightly ironic smile, he suddenly cut deep, yet with the same mildness, the same almost inhuman indifference, except for the pale flash of fire in his eyes. "Neither Breca nor you ever fought such battles," he said. "I don't boast much of that. Nevertheless, I don't recall hearing any glorious deeds of yours, except that you murdered your brothers. You'll prowl the stalagmites of hell for that, friend Unferth, clever though you are." The hall was numb. The stranger was no player of games. and yet he was shrewd, you had to grant. Whether or not they believed his wild tale of superhuman strength, no thane in the hall would attack him again and risk the slash of that mild, coolly murderous tongue. Old King Hrothgar, for one, was pleased. The madman's single-mindedness would be useful in a monster fight. He spoke. "Where's the queen? We're all friends in this hall. Let her come to us and pass the bowl." She must have been listening behind her door. She came out, radiant, and crossed swiftly to the great golden bowl on the table by the hearth. As if she'd brought light and warmth with her, men began talking, joking, laughing, both Danes and Geats together. When she'd served all the Danes and the lesser Geats, she stood, red hair flowing, her neck and arms adorned in gold, by the leader of the strangers. "I thank God," she said, "that my wish has been granted, that at last I have found a man whose courage I can trust." The stranger smiled, glanced at Unferth. Hrothgar's top man had recovered a little, though his neck was still dark red. "We'll see," the stranger said. And again I found something peculiar happening to my mind. His mouth did not seem to move with his words, and the harder I stared at his gleaming shoulders, the more uncertain I was of their shape. The room was full of a heavy, unpleasant scent I couldn't place. I labored to remember something, twisted roots, an abyss. I lose it. The queer little spasm of terror passes. Except for his curious beardlessness, there is nothing frightening about the stranger. I've broken the backs of bulls no weaker than he is. Hrothgar made speeches, his hand on the queen's. Unferth sat perfectly still, no longer blushing. He was struggling to make himself hope for the stranger's success, no doubt. "Heroism is more than noble language, dignity. Inner heroism, that's the trick. Glorious carbuncle of the soul. Except in the life of the hero, the whole world's meaningless." He took a deep breath. He would try to be a better person, yes. He forced a smile, but it twisted out of his control. Tears. He got up suddenly and, without a word, walked out. Hrothgar told the hall that the stranger was like a son to him. The queen's smile was distant, and the nephew, Hrothulf, picked at the table with a dirty fingernail. "You already have more sons than you need," the queen laughed lightly. Hrothgar laughed too, though he didn't seem to get it. He was tipsy. The stranger went on sitting with the same unlighted smile. The old king chatted of his plans for Freawaru, how he would marry her off to his enemy, the king of the Heathobards. The stranger smiled on, but closed his eyes. He knew a doomed house when he saw it, I had a feeling. But for one reason or another he kept his peace. I grew more and more afraid of him. And at the same time, who can explain it, more and more eager for the hour of our meeting. The queen rose at last and retired. The fire in the hearth had now died down. The priests filed out to the god ring to do their devotions. Nobody followed. I could hear them in the distance. "O ghostly destroyer!" The cold ring of gods stared inward with large, dead eyes. "It is the business of rams to be rams, and of goats to be goats, the business of shapers to sing, and of kings to rule. The stranger waits on. as patient as a grave mound. I too wait, whispering, whispering, mad like him. Time grows, obeying its mechanics like all of us. So the young shaper observes, singing to the few who remain, fingertips troubling a dead man's harp. Frost shall freeze and fire melt wood. The earth shall give fruit, and ice shall bridge dark water, make roofs, mysteriously lock earth's flourishings. But the fetters of frost shall also fall, fair weather return, and the reaching sun restore the restless sea. We wait. The king retires, and his people leave. The Geats build up the fire, prepare to sleep. And now, silence, darkness. It is time. Chapter 12. I touch the door with my fingertips, and it bursts for all its fire-forged bands. It jumps away like a terrified deer, and I plunge into the silent hearth-lit hall with a laugh that I wouldn't much care to wake up to myself. I trample the planks that a moment before protected the hall like a hand raised in horror to a terrified mouth. Sheer poetry. Huh. And the broken hinges rattle like swords down the timbered walls. The Geats are stones, and whether it's because they're numb with terror or stiff from too much mead, I cannot tell. I am swollen with excitement, bloodlust, and joy, and a strange fear that mingle in my chest like the twisting rage of a bonfire. I step onto the brightly shining floor and angrily advance on them. They're all asleep, the whole company. I can hardly believe my luck, and my wild heart laughs, but I let out no sound. Swiftly, softly, I will move from bed to bed and destroy them all, swallow every last man. I am blazing, half crazy with joy. For pure mad prank, I snatch a cloth from the nearest table and tie it around my neck to make a napkin. I delay no longer. I seize up a sleeping man, tear at him hungrily, bite through his bone locks, and suck hot, slippery blood. He goes down in huge morsels, head, chest, hips, legs, even the hands and feet. My face and arms are wet, matted. The napkin is sopping. The dark floor steams. I move on at once, and I reach for another one, whispering, whispering, chewing the universe down to words. And I seize a wrist. A shock goes through me. Mistake. It's a trick. His eyes are open, were open all the time, cold-bloodedly watching to see how I work. The eyes nail me now as his hand nails down my arm. I jump back without thinking, whispering wildly, jump back without thinking. Now he's out of his bed, his hand still closed like a dragon's jaws on mine. Nowhere on Middle-earth, I realize, have I encountered a grip like his. My whole arm's on fire, incredible, searing pain. It's as if his crushing fingers are charged like fangs with poison. I scream, facing him, grotesquely shaking hands. Dear long-lost brother, kinsman Thane! And the timbered hall screams back at me. I feel the bones go, ground from their sockets, and I scream again. I am suddenly awake. The long, pale dream, my history, falls away. The mead hall is alive. Great cavernous belly, gold-adorned, blood-stained, howling back at me, lit by the flickering fire in the stranger's eyes. He has wings. Is it possible? And yet it's true, out of his shoulders come terrible, fiery wings. I jerk my head, trying to drive out illusion. The world is what it is, and always was. That's our hope, our chance. Yet even in times of catastrophe, we people it with tricks. Grendel, Grendel, hold fast to what is true. Suddenly, darkness. My sanity has won. He's only a man. I can escape him. I plan. I feel the plan moving inside me like thaw-time waters rising between cliffs. When I'm ready, I give a ferocious kick, but something's wrong. I am spinning, whir, falling through bottomless space, whir, snatching at the huge twisted roots of an oak, a blinding flash of fire. No, darkness. I concentrate. I have fallen, slipped on blood. He viciously twists my arm behind my back. By accident it comes to me. I have given him a greater advantage. I could laugh. Woe! Woe! And now something worse. He's whispering, spilling words like showers of sleet, his mouth 3 inches from my ear. I will not listen. I continue whispering. As long as I whisper myself, I need not hear. His syllables lick at me, chilly fire. His syllables lick at me, chilly fire. His syllables lick at me, chilly fire. His syllables lick. A meaningless swirl in the stream of time. A temporary gathering of bits. A few random specks, a cloud. Complexities, green dust, purple dust, gold. Additional refinements, sensitive dust, copulating dust. The world is my bone cave, I shall not want. He laughs as he whispers. I roll my eyes back. Flames slip out at the corners of his mouth. As you see it, it is, while the seeing lasts, dark nightmare history, time as coffin. But where the water was rigid, there will be fish, and men will survive on their flesh till spring. It's coming, my brother, believe it or not. Though you murder the world, turn plains to stone, transmogrify life into I and it, strong searching roots will crack your cave and rain will cleanse it. The world will burn green. Sperm, build again. My promise. Time is the mind, the hand that makes. Fingers on harp strings, hero swords, the acts, the eyes of queens. By that I kill you. I do not listen. I am sick at heart. I have been betrayed before by talk like that. Mama! I bawl. Shapes vague as lurking seaweed surround us. My vision clears. The stranger's companions encircle us, useless swords. I could laugh if it weren't for the pain that makes me howl. And yet I address him, whispering, whimpering, whining. If you win, it's by mindless chance. Make no mistake. First you tricked me, and then I slipped. Accident. He answers with a twist that hurls me forward, screaming. The thanes make way. I fall against a table and smash it, and wall timbers crack. And still he whispers, Grendel, Grendel, you make the world by whispers, second by second. Are you blind to that? Whether you make it a grave or a garden of roses is not the point. Feel the wall. Is it not hard? He smashes me against it, breaks open my forehead. Hard, yes. Observe the hardness, write it down in careful runes. Now sing of walls, Sing, I howl. Sing, I'm singing. Sing words. Sing raving hymns. You're crazy. Ow! Sing, I sing of walls, I howl. Hooray for the hardness of walls. Terrible, he whispers. Terrible. He laughs and lets out fire. You're crazy, I say. If you think I created that wall that cracked my head, you're a fucking lunatic. Sing walls, he hisses. I have no choice. The wall will fall to the wind as the windy hill will fall, and all things thought in former times. Nothing made remains, nor man remembers, and these towns shall be called the Shining Towns. Better, he whispers. That's better. He laughs again, and the nasty laugh admits I'm slyer than he guessed. He's crazy. I understand him, all right. Make no mistake. Understand his lunatic theory of matter and mind, the chilly intellect, the hot imagination, blocks and builder, reality as stress. Nevertheless, it was by accident that he got my arm behind me. He penetrated no mysteries. He was lucky. If I'd known he was awake, if I'd known there was blood on the floor when I gave him that kick... The room goes suddenly white, as if struck by lightning. I stare down, amazed. He has torn off my arm at the shoulder. Blood pours down where the limb was. I cry. I bawl like a baby. He stretches his blinding white wings and breathes out fire. I run for the door and through it. I move like wind. I stumble and fall. Get up again. I'll die. I howl. The night is aflame with winged men. No, no, think. I come suddenly awake once more from the nightmare. Darkness. I really will die. Every rock, every tree, every crystal of snow cries out cold-blooded objectness. Cold. Sharp outlines, everything around me, distinct, detached as dead men. I understand. Mama, I bellow. Mama, Mama, I'm dying. But her love is history. His whispering follows me into the woods, though I've outrun him. It was an accident, I bellow back. I will cling to what is true. Blind, mindless, mechanical, mere logic of chance. I am weak from loss of blood. No one follows me now. I stumble again, and with my one weak arm I cling to the huge twisted roots of an oak. I look down past stars to a terrifying darkness. I seem to recognize the place, but it's impossible. Accident, I whisper. I will fall. I seem to desire the fall, and though I fight it with all my will, I know in advance that I can't win. Standing baffled, quaking with fear, 3 feet from the edge of a nightmare cliff, I find myself incredibly moving toward it. I look down, down into bottomless blackness, feeling the dark power moving in me like an ocean current, some monster inside me, deep sea wonder, dread night monarch, astir in his cave, moving me slowly to my voluntary tumble into death. Again, sight clears. I am slick with blood. I discover I no longer feel pain. Animals gather around me, enemies of old, to watch me die. I give them what I hope will appear a sheepish smile. My heart booms terror. Will the last of my life slide out if I let out breath? They watch with mindless, indifferent eyes, as calm and midnight black as the chasm below me. Is it joy I feel? They watch on, evil, incredibly stupid, enjoying my destruction. Poor Grendel's had an accident, I whisper. So may you all.
The End. You've been listening to Grendel by John Gardner, narrated by George Guiddell.